Chapter 10. I was seized by a deadly terror when I saw their troop advancing. After witnessing their cruelty, I thought they were going to undertake a wholesale massacre. The hunters, all of them guerrillas, led the advance. I noticed that they had abandoned their weapons, which gave me a little hope. Behind them came the loaders and beaters, among whom there was a more or less equal number of gorillas and chimpanzees. The hunters seemed to be the masters, and their manner was that of aristocrats. They did not appear to be ill-disposed, and chatted among themselves as cheerfully as one could wish. In fact, I am now so accustomed to the paradoxes of this planet that I wrote the preceding sentence without thinking of the absurdity it represents. And yet, it's the truth. The gorillas had the manner of aristocrats. They chatted together happily in an articulate language, and their faces expressed at every moment human sentiments, not a trace of which I had found in Nova. Alas, what had become of Nova? I shuddered as I recalled the blood-stained alley. I now understood her emotion at the sight of our chimpanzee. There existed a fierce hatred between the two races. To realize this, one only had to see the attitude of the captive men at the monkey's approach. They struggled frenziedly, thrashing out with hands and feet, ground their teeth, foamed at the mouth, and gnawed furiously at the strings of the net. Without paying attention to this hubbub, the hunter gorillas, I found myself calling them the nobility, gave some orders to their servants. Some big carts, rather low on the ground and completely caged in, were lined up on a track on the other side of the net. Into these we were bundled, 10 or so to a vehicle. A fairly lengthy operation, for the prisoners struggled desperately. Two gorillas, their hands encased in leather gloves to protect them from bites, took hold of them one by one, freed them from the trap, and flung them into the cages, the doors of which were then shut fast, while the nobles directed the operation, leaning negligently on their walking sticks. When it came to my turn, I tried to draw attention to myself by talking. But no sooner had I opened my mouth than one of the monkeys, no doubt mistaking my action for a menace, brutally stuffed his enormous glove into my face. I was forcibly kept silent and thrown like a bundle into a cage, together with a dozen men and women who were still too agitated to pay any attention to me. When we were all loaded inside, one of the servants checked the lock on each cage and went and reported to his master. The latter gave a signal, and a roar of engines echoed through the forest. The carts started to move forward, each one towed by a sort of tractor driven by a monkey. I could distinctly see the driver of the vehicle behind mine. He was a chimpanzee. From time to time he made ironical remarks at us, and when the engines slowed down I could hear him humming a rather melancholy little tune, not altogether lacking in harmony. This first stage was so short that I scarcely had time to recover my senses. After driving for a quarter of an hour along a rough track, the convoy came to a halt on a stretch of open ground in front of a house built of stone. It was the edge of the forest. Beyond it I could see a plain covered in crops which looked like cereals. The house, with its red-tiled roof, green shutters, and an inscription on a panel at the entrance, looked like an inn. I realized at once it was a meeting place for the hunt. The she-monkeys had come here to wait for their lords and masters, who presently arrived in private cars along the same track we had taken. The lady gorillas sat around in armchairs, chatting together in the shade of some big trees which looked like palms. One of them was sipping a drink through a straw. As soon as the carts were parked, they came up, curious to see the results of the hunt, and especially the game that had been shot, which some gorillas, protected by aprons, were extracting from two big vans to display it in the shade of the trees. It was a classical hunting scene. Here again the monkeys worked methodically. They placed the bleeding bodies on their backs, side by side in a long row, as though along a chalk line. Then, while the she-monkeys uttered little cries of admiration, they applied themselves to presenting the game in an attractive manner. They stretched the arms down the sides of the bodies, opened the hands with the palms facing upwards. They straightened the legs, making the articulations work to give each body a less corpse-like appearance, rectified an inelegantly twisted limb, and minimized the contraction of a neck. Then they carefully smoothed down the hair, particularly the women's, as some hunters smooth down the coat or feathers of an animal they have just shot. I am afraid I am unable to convey the grotesque and diabolical quality which this scene had for me. Have I adequately stressed the absolutely and totally simian appearance of these monkeys, apart from the expression in their eyes? Have I described how these she-monkeys, likewise dressed in sports clothes but with great elegance, jostled one another to view the best specimens and point them out while congratulating their lords and masters? Have I said that one of them, taking a little pair of scissors out of her bag, leant over a body, cut off a lock of brown hair, curled it round her finger, and then, with the others soon following her example, pinned it onto her hat? The exhibition of the game was soon completed. Three rows of bodies carefully laid out, men and women alternately, the latter displaying a line of golden breasts to the monstrous sphere blazing in the sky. Looking away in horror, I noticed a new figure carrying an oblong box fastened to a tripod. It was a chimpanzee. I quickly recognized in him the photographer who was making a pictorial record of these trophies for simian posterity. The session lasted more than a quarter of an hour, the gorillas having themselves photographed first of all individually in advantageous poses, some of them placing one foot with a triumphant air on one of their victims. Then, as a compact group, each of them putting an arm round his neighbour's shoulders. The she-monkeys in their turn were then photographed and assumed graceful postures in front of the slaughter, with their decorated hats well to the fore. This scene was imbued with a horror out of all proportion to the normal brain. I succeeded for some time in restraining the blood that was bubbling in my veins. But when I noticed the body on which one of these females had sat down to obtain a more sensational snapshot, when I recognized in the face of the corpse stretched out among the others the boyish, almost childish features of my luckless companion, Arthur Levin, it was no longer possible to contain myself. And my emotion also exploded in an outlandish manner, in keeping with the grotesque aspect of this macabre exhibition. I gave way to a fit of wild hilarity. I burst out laughing. I had not thought of my companions in the cage. I was utterly incapable of thinking. The tumult unleashed by my laughter reminded me of their proximity, which was no doubt as dangerous for me as that of the monkeys. Menacing arms were stretched in my direction. I realized the peril and stifled my laughter by burying my head in my arms. I'm not sure, however, that I should have avoided being strangled and torn to bits if some of the monkeys, alarmed by the din, had not re-established order with a few thrusts of their pikes. Moreover, another incident soon diverted their general attention. The gorillas made their way in small groups towards the house, chatting merrily together, while a photographer gathered up his impedimenta after taking a few shots of our cages. We men, however, had not been forgotten. I had no idea of the fate which the monkeys were reserving for us, but it was clearly their policy to look after us. Before disappearing into the inn, one of the nobles gave some instructions to a gorilla who appeared to be a team leader. The latter came over to us, assembled his subordinates, and presently the servants brought us something to eat in basins, and some buckets of water to drink. The food consisted of a sort of porridge. I was not hungry, but was determined to eat in order to keep up my strength. I approached one of the receptacles, round which several prisoners were squatting. I did as they did, and stretched out a timid hand. They gave me a surly look, but the food being ample, did not impede me. It was a thick mash, with a cereal base, which did not taste bad, I swallowed several handfuls without displeasure. Our menu was moreover enriched by the goodwill of our guards. Now that the hunt was over, these beaters, who had so frightened me, proved to be less unpleasant, so long as we behaved ourselves. They walked up and down in front of the cages and threw us some fruit from time to time, deriving great amusement from the stampede which these offerings never failed to provoke. I even witnessed a scene which gave me food for thought. A little girl had caught a piece of fruit in the air, when her neighbor rushed at her to snatch it away. One of the monkeys then brandished his pike, poked it through the bars, and pushed the man back as hard as he could. Then he put another bit of fruit in the same child's hand. I thus realized that these creatures were capable of pity. When the meal was over, the team leader and his assistants set about modifying the composition of the convoy by transferring some of the captives from one cage to another. They seemed to be making some sort of selection, but on what basis I could not tell. Finding myself eventually placed in a group of extremely handsome men and women, I tried to persuade myself that this was on account of our being the most remarkable subjects, deriving a bitter consolation from the thought that the monkeys, at first glance, had judged me worthy of being included in an elite. I was surprised and overjoyed to see Nova among my new companions. She had escaped the massacre, and I gave thanks to the heaven of Betelgeuse. It was with her, above all in mind, that I had scrutinized the victims at great length, fearful of seeing at any moment her lovely body among the pile of corpses. I felt as though I had recovered a being that was dear to me, and losing my head once more, I rushed over to her, opening my arms wide. It was utter madness. My gesture terrified her. Had she then forgotten our intimacy of the night before? Was such a marvelous physique not animated by any sort of mind? I felt downcast to see her shrink away at my approach, her hands extended like claws as though to throttle me, which she probably would have done had I persisted. Yet when I checked myself, she calmed down fairly quickly. She lay down in a corner of the cage, and I followed her example with a sigh. All the other captives had done likewise. They now looked listless, prostrate, and resigned to their fate. Outside, the monkeys were getting ready for the convoy to move off. A tarpaulin was stretched over our cage and fastened halfway down the sides, letting in some light. Some orders were issued. The engine started up. I found myself traveling at high speed, towards an unknown destination, trembling at the thought of the fresh tribulations that awaited me on the planet Soror.